going to apologize in advance for the timbre of my voice. I am getting over a cold. So good afternoon. This is the Design Commission. I'd like to begin by introducing first the Bureau of Development Services staff who are here today. They include Tim Herron, and we welcome Paul Scarlett today as well. Hello. The members of the commission here today are myself, Gwen Milius, the chair, David Work, the vice chair, Andrew Jansky, Ben Kaiser, and Jane Hansen. We may be expecting Commissioner Keltner later. Commission members are private citizens appointed by the mayor to provide review of new construction or remodeling of projects within designated design zones. We are not paid but serve entirely as volunteers. More detailed information regarding the purpose and function of the commission can be found in the Portland Zoning Code. Commission members must declare a conflict of interest, bias, or ex parte contact prior to the staff presentation of a particular case. If a commission member has a conflict of interest or bias, they are not allowed to participate in commission discussion or voting on that project. If a commission member has had an ex parte contact, they must declare the substance of it on the record, and it is subject to rebuttal. Our first item today is a brief conversation with the Director of Bureau of Development Services, Paul Scarlett. Just wanted to welcome you and have a quick introduction with the hello, Ms. Catherine Schultz. How are you? We were expecting David, and we have you, which is great. Thanks. And we'll switch out. Not a bad thing. Yeah, there you go. So we just wanted to have an opportunity to meet with you and say hello. And Tim, if you'd like to.
I think you got it. Okay. Paul likes to meet with our new commissioners. I'd like to get him here more regularly, meaning yearly. I think it's been a couple years since the last time he came up. But there's some new faces. And I think, frankly, this is kind of a spinoff a little bit on advocacy in our discussion at the retreat just a couple weeks ago, and kind of maintaining not just the letter connection to those that be and our leaders and our commissioners, but also a visual connection. So Paul's here, and I'm sure he's got some stuff to say, but pretty informal. I don't think we need much more than 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sounds good. Good afternoon, and thanks for having me here. I'm pleased to take a few minutes and just cover a couple of things happening in the Bureau. But first and foremost, like Tim said, it's an opportunity for me to meet with you all and express my appreciation for the time and commitment that you put in as part of the Design Commission. And I know it's, we ask a lot and you expect a lot, and together we make it work. But a four-year term, it's a long period of time, and it's, of course, you can have two of those, so 8 years is a long time. And we know that, and what you know that it doesn't go unnoticed. We really appreciate it. And an aspect of your review and advice and input into the work we're doing lends itself to some balance, and of course, trying to make sure the policies are being adhered. I've been in Portland for a period of time, and I've traveled a number of places, and I think we have one of the nicest downtown, one of the nicest cities, and a lot of it is in part because of the civic involvement and all the participation by the public, making sure government regulations are balanced and that they contribute to the city's livability and economic vitality. And that's something I'm proud to be a part of. And as Director for Bureau of Development Services, I couldn't be more proud of the work staff does, and the design and historic review sections are very passionate about what they do and meet and are very involved in not just the review of the sort of projects that come in, but of course the code that manages and oversees those guidelines and attributes that we want to protect and promote. And kudos to Tim and his staff. They do a wonderful job, and I make it to their meetings more often than I probably come to yours, but couldn't be more proud of the work they're doing. And Commissioner Sossman, we were under Commissioner Leonard up to last March, and Commissioner Sossman's on board, and really appreciate what the commission does and the work we're doing. So we feel like it's been a very smooth transition. A few years ago, like a lot of other entity, were pretty devastated by the recession, and we had to let go more than half of our staff, which accounted to more than 160 live bodies. And that was one of the hardest things I had to do, and hopefully won't ever have to do that again. Very happy to be on the other 180 side of it, where we're now bringing staff back as a result of the economy picking back up. And so staff throughout the Bureau and different work groups, our budget was submitted a couple weeks ago, and we do have positions in the land use division, planner position specific to the design work that we're seeing most of, or a lot of land use review type cases are in the design section. So pretty pleased to have the ability to have some additional resources, and that should help. I know you are challenged and have to deal with not just the projects, but some of the sort of concerns about design guidelines, design regulations, and how those could be streamlined, possibly costs associated with those. We are a fee-supported bureau. 90% of our operation is fee-supported, and general fund is part of the land use program, but just a small portion. And so we, you know, try to find that balance between streamlining the regulation, providing timely service, as well as making sure it all works. And of course, there's always a cost associated with it. So we've lately, there's a momentum to look at reducing costs, fees around some of the regulations, i.e. I think the Irvington Historic District is one that comes to mind, where there are concerns about the type of reviews that are necessary based on the type of work and the costs associated. So we're in discussions, we being myself and Susan Anderson from Planning and Sustainability, and the mayor's office, Commissioner Salzman's office. So those things are being addressed, and hopefully we'll come up with a workable solution. But just, I think our operation, we're in a better position to respond to not just land use, but inspections and plan review and the big projects, small projects, and so enforcement work too. So certainly in a better position than we were a couple years ago, but what mostly I wanted to express was my appreciation for your role and your contribution and work that you're helping us in achieving this larger picture of having a very great place in the city of Portland to live, work, and recreate.
Thank you.
Are there, happy to take any questions or comments.
Are there questions? Mr. Scarlett?
More of a
okay, sure, Andy.
So, yeah, 8 years is a long time.
It is.
Getting there.
Commissioner Jansky is finishing his eighth year as a commissioner.
Oh, thank you. That's wonderful.
But what I think what's definitely made it easy for me is, you know, how prepared staff is and all of the information that they get to us, and push the applicants, who can occasionally be a little slow or tardy, and, you know, to keep the process going. It's just amazing to have all of the information prepared, and you know, they work out a lot of the problems that they keep this place operating really smooth. So, you know, it's really nice to have everybody that, you know, is here and you don't see too, because you know, our meetings are very efficient, and I could see things not being anywhere near as smooth as they are without strong staff support.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate hearing that. That's good. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming down, Paul.
You're welcome.
One thing that came up in our recent retreat was just what is the perception, and so the question goes to you, what have you heard back from the development and construction community of Portland as to how we're perceived and how we're, if this, what kind of job this panel is seen as doing for the city of Portland from their perspective, because that's who we're with most of the time.
So right.
Curious.
I think there's a correlation between the work that staff does. As you were explaining, how can you resolve some of those things at the lowest level possible, sort of the front end? And if they're not resolved, then, and they're bumped up to the design commission, what's your role? My understanding, and based on what I've been briefed and aware of, is I think that perception's changed for the better. I think a few years ago, particularly during the boom, there was a lot of projects happening, a lot of probably more interactions. And there were concerns that were expressed about whether staff or the commission kind of redesigning some of those aspects, you know, that folks get frustrated with, and is our role to review or to design, and where's the line? And as of late, I'm hearing that the process is going a lot smoother, that the role of the commission, particularly the meetings, are being run more efficiently. The outcomes seem to be more reasonable. There's a balance between what's practical, what's the policy, what's the guidelines, and how do you hit that sweet spot. And so I'm pleased to be hearing that the perception, and from what I understand, it's going a lot smoother. Some of those concerns probably mirror the perception that was attributed to the Historic and Landmarks Commission as well. So kudos to you guys. I mean, obviously, it's going better based on what I've heard and my perception.
It's good to hear.
Yeah.
To piggyback on that, what is the perception of other bureaus who come in front of us and try and are working with us? And I've heard myself mixed reviews about the perception of coming into that design review.
I honestly couldn't tell you. I'm not aware of that. That hasn't been fed back my way about how the other bureaus might feel. The bureaus I can think of are typically involved in infrastructure work, so I'm not sure how their input or concerns would connect with ours or with the commission. I have to defer to Tim.
I think you're all doing great.
Yeah. And everybody loves
us. Say what you thought.
I think the shortly tag on that, I think I mentioned only briefly to Paul, but part of our retreat is reaching out to bureaus when it comes to areas that are, for instance, non-standard improvements in the right-of-way, mm-hmm. where there is a review threshold that can be mitigated by design commission advice. And I think we constantly, because you need to, just be reaching out and making connections to other bureaus. And that was a point of conversation at our retreat.
Okay.
I think that's where some of that came from.
That's good.
Any other comments or questions?
Yeah, one more comment. Something interesting, I was speaking to somebody recently, and they brought up the point that, and I agree, Portland doesn't have, you know, Oregon doesn't have many Fortune 500 companies. We don't export a whole lot. One of our biggest attributes is real estate and urban planning, and that's right. One thing we are very good at, and we do export now. And so the importance of your position, Paul, is very important in Portland, just overall Portland's success. And I think and we're all aware of this, saying nothing new, but how the permit department treats development and developers and permit fees and how that process goes and how the design commission treats development and construction right. is extremely important, because it's one of the most important parts of Portland, in my opinion. So it's not just the background, it's the foreground of what Portland is. And so hats off to you to doing a great job. And I think that's the onus is upon all of us to facilitate that process right. for those trades, so it becomes conducive to good projects and good planning. So.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
It's fun. Has its challenges, but overall, enjoy the job. It's great, great responsibilities.
Great.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. In conclusion, I want to thank you for coming, and I'm really glad to hear that we're adding some planning staff. The folks that have been holding the fort down during the lull have been doing some fairly Herculean things to keep the wheels on, and their work often makes us look smarter and better informed than we might actually be. And they do a terrific work for us, and I know that there haven't been instances where I feel like they have let us down, but I can tell that there's been strain.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm glad to hear that there's going to be that they're staffing up. I think it's time. So, and we certainly appreciate your support. We are about to do our first State of the City address ever as a commission. It's something that's actually part of our charter. and it's never been done. And I guess Historic Landmarks has been doing it every year.
Yep, historically. Yes.
So if there's any advice or you know, thoughts that you would like to see represented in there, then you want to get
okay. I'll work with Tim.
Yeah,
because that is how you present and come across at council can be you know, a major impact, because it's
sure.
of course not just that moment, but it's recording can be viewed by others, and you never know what you have to say, how it can be beneficial elsewhere mm-hmm. and in another time.
Sure, absolutely. So just want to put that out there. Well, thank you very much for coming today.
You're welcome.
Really
thank you
it.
Again.
Thank
Take
you.
Care.
Thanks.
All right. Okay, so let's see. We have welcomed Commissioner Keltner since we got started on the last item, and we are a full house for the first time in a while.
Yeah, I remember the last
time. Gwen, I'm leaving for this first
Except for Jane. Jane is recruiting herself for this case. Yeah, so we were a full house for about
I'll be leaving
5 minutes. Okay, great. So our next item is the gateway identification markers for Terwilliger Plaza. It's a briefing. Allison Krauss from Portland Parks and Recreation and Kara Fioravanti. Actually, that would be Tim Heron is here.
Tim Heron, VDS. Kara and I traded on this one. She's got another case she's focused on. So I'll simply turn it over to Kurt and Allison to do the show. The commission received their package about a week or so ago, and I think it's because of the length of it. It definitely needs a presentation that kind of mm-hmm. ground them. So I turn it over.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Commission, for having me again. My name is Allison Rouse. I'm a project manager with Portland Parks and Recreation, and we are pleased to be here to bring to you, to talk to you about the gateway identification markers we'd like to build at the north and the south end of Terwilliger Parkway, not so much Terwilliger Plaza, but the parkway itself. This year, the parkway is 100 years old, and a centennial celebration is scheduled for July of this year, organized by the Friends of Terwilliger, which is a dedicated coalition of stakeholders who have been partnering with the Bureau in stewardship of the resource and also to try to advance some of the goals of the planning that was done years ago around the parkway. The ID markers are a project for the next 100 years to call out the north and south entrances to the parkway, to identify that the corridor is a park, not just a road or quick way into downtown, and to help set up an aesthetic for future interpretive projects, the planning for which will begin this year. As far as our process, we've had several meetings with a core group of interested stakeholders this winter. We spoke to the Landmarks Commission in January, had a public meeting, visited with the Disability Advisory Committee, and now we're here to seek your input as well. The budget is quite modest, only enough to build the north marker at present. But we didn't want to limit our thinking, and so Kurt will run you through our process on what the intersection is of those two ideas. The north marker needs to be in place in time for that centennial celebration in July. So we're hoping to complete the design later this month and then begin building in probably late April. I'd like to thank the Friends of Terwilliger in particular for their stewardship of the parkway and for their support of PPNR in general. I'd like to thank Metro for their funding for this project, which is a local share of their 2006 Natural Areas Bond. OHSU and the folks at Terwilliger Plaza for their support of PPR and also of this particular process. And then also PBOT and BES, who's are working on a project at the southern end of the parkway that will most likely be the spot for the southern marker when that one can be funded. And thank you. I'll hand off to Kurt Lango now.
My name is Kurt Lango with Lango Hansen Landscape Architects, 1100 Northwest Gleason. Wanted just to pick up on what Allison talked about just in terms of goals and walk you through a little bit about the siting for each of the markers and then concept designs and phasing. As Allison mentioned, you know, this marker is really multifaceted. It needs to be a marker that can be read by motorists traveling along Terwilliger, bicyclists that kind of use that adjacent pathway, as well as foot traffic. So in kind of thinking about the design, we had to think about these different layers and how you might see it and read it and also interact with it. As she mentioned, we needed to brand the parkway as a park, so simply not as a road. And that kind of tied a little bit into the design itself and how you would read it at kind of different levels. And then also, and this was suggested by the Friends, would be to think about the palette of materials and that there may be future opportunities for interpretive elements along along Terwilliger, and this might set the tone for that. As Allison mentioned, there is a north marker and a south marker. The south marker will happen in the future, and actually it's tied to a PBOT BS project. In this particular location, they're reworking some of the roadways to kind of clean up the intersections, and by doing so, they're creating a stormwater planter. As part of our work, we'll be kind of integrating the sign into that. We'll share some kind of images of how that may work. But this will be the south marker and will be in the future. Actually, I think PBOT will be doing this work this coming summer and kind of set the stage for the marker that will be happening in the future. On the north site, actually, we went through a process with the Friends and a small committee to determine the best location, because there's actually a number of potential areas that the sign could be located. Beginning at the top, which is just south of Sheridan. And, you know, each one has its kind of pros and cons, which I'll kind of go into. The second one is right along the right-of-way next to Dunaway Park. And then the last one is, I think it's right across from the gas station as you kind of ascend up into Terwilliger. So these are the three locations, and the first one, which I think some people felt really kind of marked the beginning of the road, over on, I think, would be on the east side of the street. And unfortunately, and with a couple of the other locations, there's a lot of visual noise. There's utilities, large existing trees with pretty expansive roots. So this one kind of fell out just because it seemed very tight in terms of that sign and how legible it would be. Skipping to number three, as you begin to ascend, that seemed to kind of make some sense, because at that point you really kind of felt like you were going up the hill, but that had its own set of issues in terms of a whole number of utilities that were underground, and then also the right-of-way in that area is actually quite expansive. It goes, it includes that existing pathway, which you see to the left. So the sign would have to be located next to that lilac garden area, which would really take it out of the site view. Also, this one is also littered with a lot of above-ground utilities. So after looking at those two, the number two site actually seemed to be the best one for a number of reasons. I think, first of all, as you begin to kind of enter that stretch of the roadway, in some ways, it's like a lot of the experiences that you encounter along Terwilliger, where as you bend about around these curves, you see something new or something appears. This particular location has the advantage of having the hills in the background, so there's definitely a connection there. And then it also gives us a lot of room to work with in terms of that kind of layering aspect. Even within that site, there were kind of a variety of locations, and with the arrows, you see kind of the timing that you have to actually view the sign. We're working with Ken Abrazzini with Abrazzini Design, who's a graphic designer and is kind of well known in the Portland area. And so as we begin to kind of look at that, there's a certain amount of kind of lead time that you need, you know, as a motorist to actually kind of read that sign. It seemed like the first location was actually the best. And so he did a number of kind of initial studies looking at the sign standard and the 10 square feet, which I think will be slightly going beyond, of what orientation would work best and how it actually kind of relates to kind of our sign. He felt that the minimum text or font height needed to be at least 5 inches to be able to be read by a motorist traveling the speed limit, and we know that people kind of exceed that a little bit when they're driving along the street there. So it also kind of boils down to, you know, what is this? And we seem to be using some of these terms kind of interchangeably. Is it a sign or a marker and a gateway? And I think after kind of thinking through this and talking with the committee and the friends, it actually has a little bit of all these things. It is a sign. It's trying to communicate, a particular location or event. We've been calling it a marker, and there's certainly a lot of precedence among kind of national historic sites or parks in terms of how that may be designed. We know that in the future there wants to be an interpretive component to it. And then lastly, the gateway, just the idea of kind of going through a threshold. You know, there's some significant examples in Portland, such as Laurelhurst. This one is a little bit unique because we felt, and the committee commented, that they felt like it really only needed to be a one-sided sign, so not necessarily a two-sided. So you're really kind of entering and then seeing the marker itself. So in that concept, we definitely wanted to use indigenous stone. You see the stone wall to the right, which forms the base of the Twilliger Plaza, which is right across the street or road from where our marker is. The idea of kind of a timeless quality, kind of distinctive, and then the idea of interpretive displays, seen at a variety of scales, and then due to the modest budget and knowing that we can't all do it at once, how can we set it up for future phases? So in plan view, I think it's fairly simple. It's in that particular location that we identified. There is the marker component, which you see right here. There's also a small seat wall here, which could also be used for interpretive displays. There is a paving component to it. I think in looking at the design, we wanted to also think about it as an urban amenity, something that you could interact, you can get up close to, you know, thereby seeing the interpretive signage, a seating piece. You have a lot of pedestrians walking along here, a lot of bicyclists as well. And then there's a slight kind of garden element kind of filled with native plants that kind of form the edge and the boundary. There is actually within this area a current stone marker that calls out the Dunaways or Miss Dunaway, and that's going to be relocated to this area to form a smaller gateway with this existing path right there. And this is an existing asphalt walkway as well. The materials, as I mentioned, planting would be native plants. The paving, we've actually talked a little bit to Landmarks, and they gave their support, as well as there was a Parks Disability Committee of perhaps reusing some of the stone cobbles, the kind of Belgian cobbles that you see in downtown Portland as a paving surface. We'll be using a similar stone, a camus basalt that you see across the street. And then there will be a kind of a dark metal sign with raised stainless steel letters for the sign component itself. So these are two perspectives. The top one showing actually not the first phase, but the subsequent phase. The first phase is really going to be the stone wall itself. the sign and then the paving in front. And that will basically kind of accommodate the budget that we have right now. In the future, there'll be this other smaller stone component, which kind of holds this edge. And then either as part of that or yet another phase, hopefully with that, then there will be more of a vertical component as well, ultimately. Across the street, there's about 2 feet or 3 feet, and then you have that vertical wall. So there isn't, so on the other side, it is pretty steep. So this is the first phase. So we definitely have a grand vision, and we have the first step in that direction. For the south marker, this is the bioswale stormwater garden that is being planned. Similar to the north site, it will be adjacent to a proposed walkway and form the edge to that stormwater treatment facility. This just gives you a little bit more in terms of kind of dimensions, about 10 feet long, so I think 1'9" tall. It will be kind of raised up against the basalt wall and kind of set kind of slightly beyond it. And then as you see in the plan view, it has kind of an L shape that actually kind of then penetrates into the wall itself. So that is the first phase. We are going to begin construction documents fairly soon, hoping for construction in May, and then we'll be finished in late June, getting ready for the grand celebration in July. So I'd be happy to take any comments or any questions that you might have.
Comments, questions, anyone?
I just had a question.
Okay.
Kurt, can you go back to the slide where it shows the vertical element?
Right there?
Yeah, so where is that in plan? So the bottom image?
It would be right in that area, right in there. Yeah.
Okay.
So in some ways you have the curved piece that comes. This is slightly raised and then forms that kind of inverted or opposite L shape right there.
Okay. And then how does the lettering size and the size of the sign compare to like National Forest signs or other? Is the sign standard forcing this to be smaller than what it needs to be in order to perform this function, or is it adequate for the speed of the vehicles and the?
Yeah, I think it's adequate. I wouldn't know how it compares to other signs. I think this one, our consultant Ambrosini kind of looked at what the speed limits were. We did pay attention in the very beginning to what the sign code allows us in terms of the square footage. But I think ultimately we felt like this was appropriate to the site. It was really a balance of not wanting to make it too big, too overwhelming, because you do need to have that kind of pedestrian interaction with it. At the same time, we looked at even smaller fonts, but we just felt that those wouldn't be legible at all for people driving. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I'm just wondering if because of the role, I mean, typically the sign standard, I think, is there to limit sort of advertising kind of things and that. This is like a city amenity that we're sort of making people aware of, right? And I'm just wondering is it going to work,
mm-hmm.
you know, given that kind of standard limitation, or is it an exception that if you could as a team, you'd be asking for, you know?
Well, I think we felt that the 5 inches based on the height of the fonts, based on the speed, is going to make
it's
it
okay.
Visible.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Other comments or questions?
I have a question. And maybe I missed it as I was flipping through, but you talked about an interpretive element at some point being added, and mm-hmm. is there thoughts on how it gets added to this or where it gets added or integrated?
That's going to be a separate process, but I think that we would like to be continue to be involved in it. I think there was some thought about another steel piece that might be low, that's part of the curved wall. It might be something that's etched into the stone. So I guess to answer your question, it hasn't been determined yet, but we feel like whatever it needs to be, it needs to kind of fit within the theme that we've developed. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so is it going to be as a part of this process that you're going through and you just haven't gotten to it yet, or it's just an element at another time?
It's an element at another time. So as part of this first phase process, that interpretive component hasn't been developed yet. In the very beginning, there was talk about this being a particular an effort to do the marker, and that in the future there would be a separate effort to do the interpretive display with sites yet to be determined. And I think we felt like this would be an ideal place to have interpretive display.
I'd like to add a little bit. The Bureau will be working with the friends and the other stakeholders, whoever else is interested actually, on an interpretive plan for the whole parkway starting this year, and then that will set the overall direction on interpretive efforts, and then various whatever the actual physical representation of that is at each site will then come down to detailed design. And yes, we would certainly like it to fit in with this thing and
fit into the big idea. Yeah, here. I guess you know you can see where I'm going with this. I'm going to challenge that a little bit because it seems like it's a key element here for what you're designing, Kurt, and how it does or doesn't integrate. And while you may not need to know exactly what the element is or what it's stating, an understanding of how something else ties into what you're doing here and informs the design of what you're doing here seems like it'd be really important to understand. I understand you probably have a funding issue, but it just seems like a big missing piece if it's going to be a piece of this particular element.
It seems like an opportunity for some wayfinding and where's the trail and
well, and also key with Dunaway,
of that
and yeah, with Dunaway Park marker just right there too. It's kind of like almost confusing. It seems to me you're setting up, but of course that next piece will help explain it. But and I understand you know the funding, but I guess I'm just a little concerned about is it just going to get attached? You know, how does it get integrated? It seems like it's a very important piece to how Kurt resolves the challenge.
Just I would say that we would definitely consider that as we go through that interpretive planning process that it needs to coordinate with whatever's done here, but we need to have this thing in the ground by July. So there's a timing issue also in addition to the funding problem. So I hear you.
Kurt's not ideal. Kurt's pretty talented. I bet he can figure out a spot for how it sure. might be integrated pretty
I have three
conceptually.
Options right.
Yeah.
I got three options right here for you.
No. The only thing I heard was talented. I think I think what we've done with this is we know what the first phase is, and I think it's that's pretty straightforward. I think that I would say from the friends and parks, and even this commission would be that as that interpretive component gets moved along, that there may be some opportunities to change kind of that smaller wall or something to better integrate with interpretive signage. So I don't think that we're going to say that this is exactly it and that the interpretive signage needs to fit into this exactly. That I think there would still be some collaboration and give and take on that.
Question. It says metal sign. What's the metal? What do you think?
What he's suggesting is an aged core tin steel with stainless steel letters.
And you know, are the letters pin mounted or are they?
They are pin mounted.
Okay.
And pin mounted very well so that they can't be removed.
Okay. Yeah. Really bolt those things down.
And so no lighting at night? Is it going to be hard to see?
And that was my question because there's an adjacent light, but is there any other lighting? Yeah.
There is. We're not planning any lighting as part of this. There will be. There is a light existing street standard just north of that. We've been out there during the evening hours, so it's going to get ambient light. But we also kind of felt that 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 putting kind of uplights or something might call a lot of attention to it, and it might be better to have that kind of ambient light just give a kind of a glow to it rather than having some directional light. So I think that was part of it, and the other part, honestly, was at this time the budget wouldn't allow it. That's not to say that we couldn't put some conduit or something in the ground that would allow future lighting, you know, if necessary.
So it's a rusted steel, and what are the letters?
They're stainless steel letters.
Okay. So it'll pop out well.
You have comments?
Are we doing questions and comments?
Yes, it's we're rolling all together. Let it all hang out.
I just want to say I really appreciate how sort of tasteful it is, and I know it's budget constrained, but it's also kind of design constraint, like restrained, which I really think is nice in the way it defers to the actual thing you're there to experience, and the sort of poetic sort of curve of the wall reflecting sort of what Terwilliger, the nature of Terwilliger. And so I appreciate all that. I was asking about the sign thing because, I mean, that seems like you really want it to work. And if that was a sort of just a sort of rote thing that you're just trying to respond to, I could see having a discussion here about whether it could be enlarged or something to make sure it really functioned the way you need it to. And I appreciate the question about lighting, but I was thinking just in terms of when this was established and the time period of it. And if you look around at all the other kind of the sort of older kind of 30s era, like WPA era kind of park systems and that, which that's later than this, but it has that very kind of just sort of understated kind of out in the landscape kind of aspect to it that I think lighting might be a kind of more modern kind of addition to. So I appreciate the way it kind of fits into the historic aspects of Terwilliger as well. So nice work. That's great.
I don't necessarily disagree that or wouldn't necessarily say lighting needs to be incorporated. It's just what I'm worried about, and maybe some of it's the renderings, is right now, does the lettering pop enough? And is it going to reflect enough at night or in the evening as a car? And is it only the car that's going to see it in the evening then? Because there's not enough contrast. You know, if you look at, thanks, David, you know, sure, the white against the blue or the brown when you see it, it really pops. It's really reflective. And so I guess it's just a concern there. Mm-hmm. Are you going to see it?
Will they be polished stainless steel or brush?
I don't think
it makes a big difference.
Well, yeah, to be honest, I couldn't tell you, but I have a feeling that they wouldn't be polished. I think they would probably be brushed.
Security.
Okay.
Any other comments?
Yeah.
Questions?
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think the location that you picked is very appropriate. I used to bike commute there for years, and that's right about where you'd put your head up and go, God, I made it through the city, and now I'm going to go on this peaceful ride along this, you know, green space. Just right about there, you know, you get through the stoplight and be like, oh. So it's going to be perfect to see that and kind of get in the mood to relax and grind up the hill. So in the direction you have it faced makes sense as you enter the park. I think you really need three of these. I know budget is limited, so no problem. But, the other entrance to the park is kind of on Highway 10. Half the people split off there and go up the hill into downtown Hillsdale. A lot fewer people go straight. Most of the people turn the corner and go up the road. Mm-hmm. So when they're coming back, they're coming in that way. And you're missing a lot of people. But I do like the... You know, the other one you picked is good too, because a lot of people come, you know, out of that area and across. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think you're missing a lot of the traffic and a lot of the opportunity to really define the beginning of the park. So I mean, people come in the middle of it. So you know, just spread it around and add another one, and
it would. Four?
Yeah. I mean, those are kind of the key. Those are the key. And, you know, my only other this is the one group I might get some mileage with. This is, you know, when you're on, in the park, you really can't see the beautiful views that you show in these pictures anymore because the canopy is so thick. There's only a few designated view corridors on that, maybe one or two. So, you know, I mean, it's, you look at some of the old historic photos, whether they're the black and white, and you can see the entire beautiful city. And now you really can't, except in the winter when a lot of the trees are down. So not that we can talk about that, but I just did, so.
Do you want but them to chop great. Down trees? Is that what you
I'm saying prune a little bit of the canopy so you can enjoy the view. And still enjoy the trees. Okay. And is there any art or?
This is the art.
What?
This is art.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You're off.
No art.
Sorry, I'm done.
Okay.
Go ahead and tell us about the art. Then.
Oh, it's very artful, Kurt. I was just curious about the vertical pylon in the future phase.
Yes.
The good thing about it is, it's the current design doesn't look like it's wanting for that. So how important is that vertical piece in the future? Is it?
That's a really good question.
Good, decide later.
It's the interpretive panel.
Well, it's a future phase, and I think there was a lot of comments about whether a vertical component was mm-hmm. required. Honestly, and I think it was this whole idea of threshold, and did it feel like you were entering a real special place with simply these horizontal pieces? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we did put that on, and I think it may be something that we know won't happen this year, and so it may be something that is kind of yet to be determined whether that actually makes it ultimately into the design. But I think there was kind of a strong desire at least to show it as a possibility.
Right. Okay. And then, as we all know, that you said aged Core 10. Does that mean it won't stay in the materials below it? Or
We'll work on that detail.
Okay.
Yeah, it will be quickly aged.
Okay. All right. That's it. I agree with David. I like the understated nature of it. It's got some precedents all over the country and in our most important parks, and I like the fact that it's a subtle addition that you can sometimes notice and maybe sometimes you won't, but that's okay.
Yeah. Any other final comments or questions? I have one to tack on. what was covered, what was said is comments that I was dutifully writing down. I did have one question. So Historic Landmarks has also reviewed it. Can you describe sort of the regulatory nature of the whole area? Are there parts that are in landmarks and parts that are design review? I know that we have some design review.
Actually, I'd ask perhaps Tim to help me out with that.
It was part of a courtesy to the age of the park. It's kind of an overlap. A similar scenario would be the South Park blocks, given how it's not a landmark, but it certainly has historic qualities. And so I think as part of our efforts, and thank you to Parks for spending the time and money to do that, was to actually brief both commissions.
And I think I would concur with Catherine that, you know, it's a little too bad that there wasn't room in the scope to extend some thinking to the how an interpretive element might be undertaken. I understand that I'll tell a client that text drives design, so I understand that you're working on what exactly is being interpreted, and that will have some that will inform to a certain extent the design. But it would be nice to have some idea about where they might go, how they might work, whether they're part and parcel with these sorts of signs or if they occur elsewhere. And we hear that you're working on it. It just feels a little backwards, and I understand that that's just the nature of the schedule and what have you, but it always gives one pause when you see something come through and you know that there's going to be something else tacked onto it, and you're just not sure how that's going to work. But other than that, I also agree with the comments that it seems quite well executed, and and that you'll, I'm sure it'll be a lovely addition to the parkway. So with that, I'm ready to send them on their way unless there's any final thoughts for the good of the order.
Yeah, I think it's a great job, Kurt. So, and I would agree with Andrew, another marker at Route 10, mm-hmm. I think that's where I've come and gone too, off of the mm-hmm. park, so you can get budget for one more. Be great.
Get the friends to do some more bake sales or something. Yeah, okay.
Charge it.
Yeah.
Charge it.
Okay, thank you so
much.
Thank you.
Never did the fuse.